Chapter 12, The Fairy Kingdom. Alex and Connor emerged from underground between a tree and a rock. They were covered in dirt and cobwebs and were breathing hard and sweating profusely. It had been so stuffy in the tunnel.
"We made it," Alex said. "We're at the surface."
"I never thought I'd be so happy to see the sun and the sky," Connor said. It was sometime around noon, and the twins had found themselves on a pleasant, grassy field next to a perfectly groomed path.
"Is that the path we should have taken after the Red Riding Hood Kingdom?" Connor asked.
"Yep," Alex said, looking down at the map.
"But think of all the fun we would have missed out on."
They shared a laugh. The twins brushed themselves off and headed down the path. They felt very safe in this place. All the trees and fields were perfectly manicured and inviting. Then again, anything would have seemed inviting after narrowly escaping a lifetime of slavery for trolls and goblins.
"Are we positive that we're in the Fairy Kingdom?" Connor said, looking around.
"I'd say it's very possible," Alex said, but she wasn't looking down at the map.
"How do you figure?" Connor asked her.
"Well,
that's an indication," Alex said, and pointed.
Grazing around a perfect little stream ahead of them, to their amazement, was a herd of unicorns. They were beautiful, white with silver horns, silver hooves, and silver manes. Connor's forehead wrinkled and his mouth dropped open.
"Oh, geez," he said. "That is the most obnoxious thing I have ever seen in my life."
"I want to pet one," Alex said, and ran toward them.
"Alex, be careful," Connor said. "They could have rabies."
"Unicorns don't have rabies, Connor," Alex said.
"You don't know where those horns have been," Connor called out.
Alex walked up to the herd, slowing her pace so she wouldn't spook them. They were so majestic and graceful, she had to stop and admire them for a moment. One saw her and walked toward her. Any sane person would have been scared by a wild animal approaching them, but Alex wasn't. For whatever reason, she knew the unicorn wasn't going to harm her. It lowered its head, and she petted its face. Connor walked up and stood just behind her. All the other unicorns slowly surrounded them.
"Alex," Connor said, "this is making me incredibly nervous."
The unicorns formed a perfect circle around the twins and bowed to them. Alex smiled from ear to ear. Connor raised a suspicious eyebrow.
"This is trippy," he said.
"Maybe they're welcoming us into their kingdom," Alex said.
The unicorn stood still, as if frozen, and didn't show any sign of moving. Connor grabbed Alex's hand, and they left the circle and rejoined the path. The stream traveled beside the path as the twins traveled down it.
"Is it just me, or is that water sparkling?" Connor asked.
He was right. The farther they walked along the stream, the more it appeared to glow and shimmer.
"That must mean we're getting close," Alex said happily.
"That's Thumbelina Stream. It should take us straight into the Fairy Kingdom."
"I say we grab hold of the first fairy we find and call her names, like Oversized Insect or Fish Bait, until she cries," Connor said. "That's how we'll get the tears."
"No, we should come up with a really sad story to tell," Alex said, and then a thought occurred to her. "How are we going to collect the tears once they've been shed?"
Connor shrugged.
"Maybe we'll have to kidnap a fairy and keep her around until we need her to cry. What does the journal say to do?"
Alex opened the journal and found the section about the Fairy Kingdom.
"Acquiring a fairy tear is not an easy task."
"Surprise, surprise," Connor said.
"Since fairies for the most part are very happy beings, it will be very hard to find one so overcome with grief that it is brought to tears. However you manage, hopefully under moral conditions, you can use the vial hidden inside this journal's spine to contain the tear."
Alex turned the book on its side and looked closely through the hole where the pages were connected to the spine. Deep inside the journal spine was a small glass vial with a cork stopper.
"Look at this," Alex said, pulling the vial out of the spine. "It says to put the tear in this vial."
"Great. Now all we need is an emotional fairy," Connor said.
Alex stopped walking.
"Do you hear that?" she said.
Tiny sniffling sounds came from close by. The twins looked around, but couldn't see quite where they were coming from.
"What is that?" Connor asked.
He looked down beside him and had to blink a few times to make sure he wasn't imagining what he saw.
"No, this can't be real. This is too easy. Nothing has been this easy."
"What are you talking about?"
Alex asked him. Connor turned her shoulders to face what he was looking at.
Sitting on a rock on the side of the path was the fairy, and she was crying. She was only a few inches tall and had big blue wings similar to a butterfly's. She had dark hair and a purple dress made of leaves and shoes made out of flower buds. Her tiny hands were clasped around her big eyes, and tears were running down her face. The twins just stood there and stared down at her. They were afraid their minds were playing tricks on them. They both wanted to see this so badly.
"What are you looking at?"
the fairy said to the twins in a tiny, high-pitched voice.
"We're sorry," Alex said. "Why are you crying?"
Connor jerked his head toward his sister, and she knew what he was thinking. "Who cares? Get a tear."
"That's none of your business,"
the fairy said, and sobbed some more.
"Forgive me," Alex said. "I can tell you're upset about something, and I wouldn't be myself if I didn't ask if there's anything I could do to help you."
"That's sweet. Thank you,"
the fairy said, changing her attitude.
"I'm just having a very rough day, that's all."
Connor kept trying to grab the vial from his sister's hand, but she wouldn't let him take it.
"What's your name?" Alex asked the fairy.
"Trix,"
the fairy said.
"Hello, Trix. My name is Alex, and this is my brother, Connor," Alex said. "Would you like to talk about what's troubling you?"
Connor was shocked. She was actually more interested in helping this fairy than collecting one of her tears.
"My trial's in a few minutes, and I'm scared,"
Trix said.
"Your trial?" Connor asked. "Did you kill somebody?"
"Of course not,"
said Trix.
"I used magic on another fairy, and now the fairy council may ban me from the fairy kingdom."
"I'm so sorry to hear that," Alex said.
"What did you do to the other fairy?" Connor asked.
"I turned his wings into prune leaves,"
the fairy said, and cried some more.
"It was only for a moment. I turned them back, but he was provoking me. He kept teasing me about my size."
"They're going to ban you from the entire kingdom just for turning someone's wings into leaves for a couple seconds?" Connor asked.
"They've been very strict ever since that enchantress put the curse on Sleeping Beauty,"
Trix said.
"The Fairy Council believes that every fairy is a representative of their order and should act as such."
"Those are high expectations," Alex said.
"I can't leave the fairy kingdom,"
Trix cried.
"It would be so lonely, and I hate being alone. I don't have many friends to begin with."
Alex let Trix use the corner of her shirt to dry her tears. Connor turned bright red, watching his sister dispose of the tears so carelessly. He had to make the fairy produce more.
"Being banned would really be terrible, though, wouldn't it?" Connor said. "You'd probably have to live in an old bird nest somewhere in the dwarf forest and be chased by wolves and witches every day, and that's only if an ogre doesn't capture you in a jar and barbecue you first."
Trix started hysterically crying at this.
"Connor, what is wrong with you?" Alex yelled.
Connor snatched the vial from her hand and collected a tear from Trix's face just as it dripped off her chin. Alex gave him a dirty look.
"Would you like us to go with you to your trial?"
asked Alex, leaning down to be eye level with Trix. "For emotional support?"
"Yes, I would like that,"
Trix said.
"That's so kind of you."
"Well, I know what it feels like to think the whole world is against you," Alex said.
"We better get going. I don't want to be late."
Trix flew into the air and fluttered down the path. The twins walked after her.
"Alex, are you crazy?" Connor said. "We've got a tear. Let's get out of here."
"We're the only people in the world who this fairy has," Alex said. "We're going to be good people and help her out." Connor grunted with frustration.
"Helping this fairy isn't going to take away any bad memories you have from school, Alex."
Alex ignored him and followed Trix down the path. Connor followed, sulking the entire way. They traveled deeper into the fairy kingdom. Everything in the distance seemed to sparkle. They thought it was a mirage at first, but the closer they got, they saw that the trees, the grass, and the path all shined and shimmered in the sunlight.
"What's up with all the glitter?" Connor asked.
"I don't think it's glitter. I think it's magic," Alex said.
They reached the heart of the kingdom and were completely bewildered by what they saw. It was like they were standing in a gigantic tropical garden with large, colorful flowers of all shapes and species. There were weeping willows over small ponds and vines that grew across the ground and up the trees. There were beautiful bridges over many streams and ponds. There were fairies everywhere. Many flew around in the air, some just hovered above the ground, and some walked on smaller paths adjacent to the one the twins were on. They were all different shapes and sizes and colors. Some were taller than Alex and Connor. Some were as small as Trix,
and some didn't even seem to be solid, but rather made from pure light. There were just as many male fairies as there were female. Some of the fairies wore gowns. Others' clothes were made entirely from plant materials, and some wore nothing at all. Many had made miniature homes in the branches of the trees or in mushrooms on the ground, and there were fairies who even lived underwater with colorful fish. Something about this place made Alex feel as if everything were right in the world. It gave her more hope, excitement, and happiness with every step she took. It was paradise. "Have you ever seen something so beautiful in your entire life?" Alex asked her brother.
"Not too shabby," Connor said.
"The fairy council operates in the fairy palace. It's just up ahead," Trick said, and gestured the twins to follow her over a pond.
They, of course, took a bridge. They walked toward a palace made entirely out of golden arches and pillars. It was completely open. There were no more than two walls to line each room, and all the windows were tall with no glass. When you lived in a place as beautiful as this, who would want to keep out the environment? Trix took the twins to the center of the palace, into a long room with many seats facing the front.
"This would be the perfect place for a wedding," Alex said.
At the front of the room were seven fairies, Alex and Connor's size. They looked like a living rainbow. Each was dressed in a specific color, and they stood behind podiums positioned over an arch.
"That's the fairy council," Trix said. "That's Rosette, the red fairy, Tangerina, the orange fairy, Xanthus, the yellow fairy, Emeralda, the green fairy, she's mostly in charge, Skylene, the blue fairy, Violetta, the purple fairy, and Coral, the pink fairy."
Rosette was short and plump and had very rosy cheeks. Tangerina was stylish and wore her orange hair in a large beehive with actual bees flying around it. Xanthus was male. He wore a shiny suit, and parts of him were ablaze. Emeralda was tall and beautiful. She was black and wore a long emerald dress that matched her eyes and jewelry. Skylene was very pale and had hair the color of the sky and flowing robes the color of the sea. Violetta was the oldest and had grayish-purple hair. Coral was the youngest, no more than a few years older than the twins in appearance, and wore a simple pink dress and had a pair of pink wings on her back. There were two empty seats on either side of the podiums.
"Who sits there?" Alex asked Trix. "The fairy godmother sits on the left, and Mother Goose sits on the right," Trix said. "They complete the fairy council, although they're rarely here. They're always traveling around the kingdoms helping people."
"Is that you, Trix?" Emeralda asked.
"Yes, I'm here,"
Trix peeped nervously and flew to the front of the podiums.
"You're late. Please come forward," Emeralda said.
She was gracious but authoritative, someone the twins would definitely want in their corner during an altercation.
"Trix, do you know why you've been called before the fairy council?"
Trix shamefully nodded her head.
"Yes, ma'am."
"Being a fairy requires a strong sense of responsibility," Tangerina said. "Responsibility you haven't shown."
Trix nodded some more, her eyes swelling with tears.
"I know,"
she squeaked.
"Unfortunately, we can't let your actions go unpunished," Violetta said.
"We need to make an example of you, to reinforce the number one rule of being a fairy," Rosetta said.
"To never, under any circumstance, use your magic harmfully against another person, place, or thing," Xanthus said.
"Unfortunately, there's only one thing for us to do," Skylene said.
"We have to banish you from the fairy kingdom," Coral said.
Trix covered her eyes and wept harder than she had all day.
"I understand,"
she said through her sobs.
"Whoa, whoa, whoa," Connor yelled from the back. "Hold on, are you kidding me?"
He promptly walked to the front of the room and stood next to the spot where Trix was hovering.
"Connor,"
Alex said, and tried to grab him, but was too late.
"Are you seriously going to ban her for making one little mistake?" Connor asked the council with his hands on his hips.
There was whispering and murmuring among them. They were appalled that someone would so openly question their judgment.
"Please don't try to help me,"
Trix whispered to Connor.
"Young man, who do you think you are?"
Xanthus said.
"Well, I'm just a kid, but even I can tell you that your ruling is ridiculous," Connor said.
They all gasped, except for Emeralda, who kept her calm and imposing demeanor. Alex slapped an open palm against her forehead.
"How dare you?"
Tangerina said, and the bee swirling around her hair grew mad and flew faster around her head.
"You are out of line," Violetta said.
"How disrespectful," Coral said.
"How rude,"
Skylene said.
Emeralda was the only member of the assembly to remain silent. She studied Connor with her emerald eyes.
Silence, Emeralda ordered.
She raised a hand, and all her fellow assembly fairies went quiet.
Let the boy speak. I want to hear what he has to say. Go ahead, young man.
Connor wasn't sure if this was a trick or not, but he didn't hold back. Listen, I'm not a fairy, thank God, and I'm not perfect either. I try to be the best person or the best student possible, but every once in a while I slip up. I forget a homework assignment or I fall asleep in class. My best effort isn't as good as someone else's might be, and no one should have the right to scold or punish me or publicly humiliate me for it, Connor said.
Trix knew what the rules were, and she still committed an offense against one of her peers, Rosette said.
No one can be perfect, Connor said. And from what I hear, the guy had it coming. Where is his trial? Why isn't he here? Why do I always get detention for sleeping when it's ancient Mesopotamia that should be punished for being so boring? The council continued to be outraged by this outburst. Many members didn't want to tolerate it and tried to leave.
I hear what the child is saying, Emeralda said.
But we can't just pardon Trix. We're the fairy council. It wouldn't send a good message to the rest of the kingdoms,
Tangerina said. Look, Orange Lady, Connor said. In the last week, my sister and I have almost been eaten by a witch, narrowly missed being attacked by a pack of wolves, were almost killed by a possessive bridge troll, survived a burning castle, and barely escaped a life of enslavement in the troll and goblin territory. If you ask me, you've got bigger problems than a fairy turning a jerk's wings into leaves. Looks to me like you busy yourselves with stupid little things so you feel like you're doing something, when in reality, you can't handle what's really going on out there.
The council went silent, and all the members appeared to become very concerned.
Enslavement? Skylene asked. You mean the trolls and goblins are still kidnapping and enslaving people?
Yes, Connor said. There were dozens of us down there. We really could have used your help, but I guess you were too busy slapping fairies' wrists for playing pranks on one another.
Although they held their stoic expressions, the council was secretly ashamed of themselves. Connor was right. They eyed one another for a moment before Emeralda broke the silence.
On behalf of this council, I hereby forgive Trix for her crimes, Emeralda said. Xanthus, Skylene, and Tangerina, I say we pay a visit to the Troll King and the Goblin King immediately. And furthermore, let this be a lesson to all of us.
Xanthus, Skylene, and Tangerina nodded, and then disappeared into thin air with a pop.
Thank you, Mr., Emeralda said.
Wishington, Connor said. Connor Wishington.
Emeralda smiled and then disappeared with the others. Trix flew up to Connor's face and gave him a huge hug.
That's the bravest and nicest thing anyone has ever done for me,
Trix said. Connor looked back at his sister. She was beaming with pride. She was so proud of her brother. It was a look Connor rarely got to see.
You know, helping a fairy isn't going to take away any unhappy memories from school, Alex told him when she joined Connor and Trix near the podiums.
Connor slyly grinned. I had to say something. I would have regretted it if I hadn't.
The remaining Fairy Council fairies began to leave. Some simply walked off, and others disappeared into thin air, leaving behind sparks or bubbles as they went. Coral was searching the room for something and patted her lap as she went.
Here, Fisher. Where are you, Fisher?
Coral said. A fish with four legs ran past Alex and Connor and jumped up into Coral's arms.
There you are, Coral said. It's just about time for your lunch.
Alex and Connor looked to each other, confused, each wondering if the other had seen it too.
Is that what I think it is? Connor asked.
I think so, Alex said.
Coral was just about to leave when the twins stopped her.
Excuse me, Alex said. Where did you get your fish?
Oh, Fisher? Coral said. I dropped a wand in a lake once and granted him a wish after he swam down and got it for me. He wished for legs, silly thing, so he could play with some boy who lived in a village nearby. The boy ended up dying, sadly, so Fisher came to live with me.
Coral's wings began to flap, and she flew away with her pet fish.
So that was what we thought it was, Connor said.
Yes, said Alex, her head spinning with questions. That was the walking fish from Dad's story.
Chapter 13, A Wolf Pact.
There was blood everywhere. White feathers and bits of wood covered the ground. A driver had been transporting a cart full of geese into the Northern Kingdom when the big bad wolf pack attacked. The only thing that remained in one piece was the green, floppy hat the driver had been wearing. The wolves were spread out under the trees, chewing on the bones of their victims. Malamclaw jerked his head up and stared into the trees. Someone was coming. He could smell them. Whoever this person was, their scent made him anxious.
"We've got company," Malamclaw growled.
All the wolves jumped to their feet, ready to attack again if they had to. But they were no match for who was approaching. A dark, hooded figure slowly moved through the trees and up to the wolves. It stood fearlessly in front of them for a moment before unveiling itself.
"Hello, Malamclaw," said the evil queen.
"Who are you?"
Malamclaw barked. The woman before him, less than half his size, was making the hairs on the back of his neck stand up.
"You don't know me, but you know of me," the evil queen said. "Everyone does."
"It's the evil queen," a wolf snarled.
Malamclaw began shifting his weight on his front paws. He was intimidated, and he didn't like it.
"You've got a lot of nerve approaching my pack," he said. "I should have one of my wolves rip your throat out."
"I dare you," the evil queen said.
There wasn't an ounce of fear in her body. She walked closer to them, and the wolves cowered back, Malamclaw included.
"What do you want from us?"
he demanded.
"I've come to make a deal," she said.
"We don't make deals,"
Malamclaw growled.
"You will once you know what I have to offer," the evil queen said.
This intrigued the wolf.
"What kind of deal?"
he asked.
"A trade," the evil queen said. "There are two children traveling through the kingdoms, one boy and one girl. Twins. I want you to find them and bring them to me unscathed."
"You want children?"
Malamclaw mocked.
"They have something. Several things, actually, that I need," the evil queen said. "I would do it myself, but I'm indisposed at the moment."
"And if we bring them to you, what will you give us in return?"
he asked.
"When you bring them to me, I shall give you the one thing you want more than anything else in the world," the evil queen said.
Malamclaw laughed.
"Wolves want for nothing," he said.
The evil queen stared at him as if she were looking into his soul.
"Is that so?"
she asked.
"Then why do you and your pack crusade around the lands, terrorizing everything in your path? What are you trying to prove? Whose revenge are you seeking?"
Malamclaw was silent. He couldn't deny it.
"I will give you the one thing that will avenge your father's death wholly," the evil queen said. "I will give you Queen Red Riding Hood in exchange for the twins."
All the wolves, including Malamclaw, growled their doubts, but the idea was intriguing to him.
"And how could you possibly do that?"
he said. The evil queen looked at him so sternly that his heart began to race.
"Do not question me. I will have the young queen in my possession by the end of the week. Bring me the children, and I will hand her over to you. Do we have a deal or not?"
Malamclaw looked at the frightened members of his pack. They nodded at him. They didn't want to upset the queen.
"Deal,"
Malamclaw said.
"But let me warn you, if you fail to keep your end of the bargain, we'll snap your neck like a twig."
The evil queen walked up to the wolf and stood inches from his face, looking him forcefully in the eye.
"Let me warn you," she said. "Fail to keep your part, and I'll have you turned into rugs, just as Red Riding Hood did to your father. And if you ever threaten me again, I'll skin you myself."
Malamclaw froze. The evil queen knew she had him exactly where she wanted him.
"See you soon," she said.
She put her hood back over her head and disappeared into the trees in the direction she had come from. All the wolves stood still for a moment, afraid to move.
"What are we waiting for?"
Malamclaw shouted, his pride bruised.
"We have twins to find."
They charged into the horizon, howling in unison. The sound was deafening. Chapter 14, The Sleeping Kingdom.
Trix insisted that Alex and Connor stay with her the night after her trial. Of course, that meant the twins slept on the ground underneath her birdhouse-sized home hanging from a tree branch, but it was a kind gesture nonetheless. Alex and Connor couldn't sleep after seeing the walking fish in person. They laid under the stars of the fairy kingdom, most of which were actually just fairies sleeping in midair, and let their thoughts wander.
"I always thought that the walking fish was one of Dad's stories, one he made up himself," Alex said. "I wonder how he heard it."
"Probably the same way he heard about all the other stories that come from this place," Connor said.
"But then, why wasn't it as well known as Cinderella's or Snow White's stories? Why wasn't it written in the land of stories?"
Alex said, and then asked a question that had been on her mind for a while.
"Do you think Dad or Grandma were ever here? Do you think that they ever traveled into the land of stories and just never told us?"
Connor had to think about it. The idea had crossed his mind once or twice before, considering that the land of stories had been in their grandma and dad's possession before their grandma had passed it on. Could they just as easily have been transported into this world as Alex and Connor had? And if they had, how did their dad and grandma manage to find a way home?
"I don't think so," Connor ultimately decided. "They loved fairy tales so much. If they ever got here and saw everything we've seen, I doubt they would have left."
The next morning, Trix generously thanked them again and again, and after they shared goodbyes, the twins started their journey into the next kingdom.
"Sleeping Kingdom, here we come," Alex said.
"Why do I have a feeling that the spindle is going to be the most difficult item to collect?" Connor said.
Alex opened the journal to see if her brother's prediction was true.
"The spindle that pricked Sleeping Beauty's finger was the easiest item for me to collect. I had no prior plan of acquiring it, and simply pleaded my case to the queen, and she was very sympathetic. She let me take the spindle on the condition that I would return it to her once I was finished using it. Queen Sleeping Beauty is very wise, especially for someone who had been asleep for a century, and I believe she knew more about what I was after than she was willing to admit."
"Well, that's lucky," Connor said. "I wonder what sleeping for 100 years does to you. Every morning when I wake up for school, after about the 4th or 5th time I hit the snooze button, I always think I could sleep for 100 years. I wonder if you'd wake up super refreshed, or if you'd be drowsy afterward."
"That's an interesting thought," Alex said. "I wonder if she dreamed about anything. I assume it would have been a very long dream."
The twins had no money left, but, claiming to have been separated from their parents, they managed to convince two drivers, transporting a cart of goats, to let them ride along into the Sleeping Kingdom. The twins didn't mind sitting in the back with the goats, but the goats weren't thrilled about sharing with the twins.
"What are you looking at?" Connor said to one of them, after it had stared at him for a good half hour.
The road ran alongside a great sparkling ocean with water that was as blue as the sky. It was like an ocean from their world, except 1,000 times more vibrant.
"Look how beautiful the ocean is here," Alex said. "And look over there, it's Mermaid Bay."
She was referring to a large bay just ahead that curved into the shoreline. "It's pretty neat to know that, right now, as we sit in this cart, there are actual mermaids swimming down there," Alex said.
"Yeah," Connor said. "Too bad we didn't bring any snorkel gear."
Alex was slipping through the journal, making a list in her head.
"We have 5 items collected," she said. "All we need are the spindle, jewels from Snow White's coffin, and the saber from the deepest sea."
"Whatever that might be," Connor said.
Alex longingly stared out at the water.
What could the saber from the deepest sea be? With all her fairy tale knowledge, she still couldn't figure it out, and it was starting to get to her. She's hoping that any minute it would just appear in the middle of the ocean.
"We'll figure it out," Connor said. "Or I should say, you'll figure it out, and I'll pretend I helped."
After they had been on the road a bit, the twins couldn't help but eavesdrop on the conversation the drivers were having.
"Did you hear about the news from the Charming Kingdom?" one of the drivers asked the other.
"No," he said.
"Both of Queen Cinderella's glass slippers have been stolen," the driver said.
"Stolen? By who?"
"I don't know, but I reckon there's a reward for anyone with information," he said.
The twins didn't know how to react to this news. If the kingdom was claiming the slippers had been stolen, had Cinderella or Sir Lambton not put the slipper in their bag? Was there a warrant out for their arrest? And then, the most troubling question of all, if they had one of the slippers, who had the other one?
"Both were stolen?"
Alex whispered to her brother.
"It has to be that woman we saw in Red Riding Hood's castle," Connor said.
"She must be collecting for the wishing spell, too. I knew it."
"Let's just hope we get to the spindle before she does," Alex said.
The road turned away from the ocean, and the cart headed north into the Sleeping Kingdom. It was a very hilly place, surrounded by towering mountain ranges. It was a surprisingly dismal land, although the twins weren't sure what they had expected. All the fields were dry, and all the trees were bare. Everything seemed like it hadn't been alive for a very long time. "Why is everything dead?" Connor asked.
"I don't think they're dead," Alex said. "I think they're sleeping."
Sleeping Beauty's castle was located in the center of a village called Sleepy Valley, and once the twins arrived there and hopped off the cart, they understood how it had gotten its name. The entire village surrounding the castle looked deserted. The twins found a man standing behind the open window of a bakery. He was resting his head on his hand and his elbow on the windowsill. He was sleeping standing up.
"Excuse me," Alex said, not wanting to be rude and wake him up.
"Yes?"
the man asked, with his eyes still closed.
"Where is everyone?" Alex asked.
"Resting,"
the man said with a yawn, and then began to snore. Sure enough, as the twins walked through the village, they could see many other shopkeepers and servants drowsily moving about inside the shops, slowly getting their work done. They all looked as if they were about to fall asleep at any second.
"I thought the curse on the kingdom had been broken," Connor said.
"They don't seem to be sleeping because they have to. It looks like they're sleeping because they want to," Alex said.
Alex and Connor walked through the sluggish town and found Sleeping Beauty's castle. The castle was a spectacular sight. It was the tallest structure the twins had ever seen. It was made from peach-colored stones, and its many tall towers soared into the sky with the tallest in the very center. When the twins looked closely, they saw the residue left from the vines that had once grown up the castle walls. There were many vast gardens surrounding the castle, or at least there would have been if anything were alive. Gardeners slept in the garden, still clasping their tools. Every few minutes they would wake up and continue working, but they would fall back asleep almost immediately. There were guards everywhere, but the twins effortlessly walked past them. Every once in a while, a guard would open an eye and consider saying something to them, but then decided to go back to sleep instead. They found the main entrance to the castle and entered. They walked down a long hall with a soaring ceiling that led to the throne room. It had white pillars and a checkered floor. The ceiling was painted the colors of dusk, with vivid pinks and oranges. Guards lined the entire room, and they were all entirely unconscious. Sitting on the throne ahead of them was a beautiful woman. She was speaking with two men. One was tall and handsome, and the other was short and old with a white beard. The woman wore a tiara made of silver flowers and had long, flowing, golden hair. She wore a thin gown, a shade of pale rose, with matching gloves. The twins knew without a doubt that it was Sleeping Beauty. She was speaking with a royal advisor and her husband, King Chase. She looked troubled and in a state of deep contemplation. She was tired, too, like the twins' mother looked when there was a lot on her mind.
"Perhaps we should enforce a law. No sleeping permitted during the day," the advisor said.
"Absolutely not," Sleeping Beauty said. "I will not force something so oppressive on my people. Let us not forget that this isn't their fault."
"The curse is over, Your Highness," the advisor said. "It's time for the kingdom to wake up and see that."
"As far as I'm concerned, the curse is upon us until the day this kingdom is in the exact condition it was before the spell was cast," Sleeping Beauty said. "I may be awake, but being asleep for 100 years has taken a toll on them. They shouldn't be punished or held accountable for any of this."
"Darling, you may have no choice," King Chase said, taking her hand in his. "The kingdom is falling apart. There are no crops being grown or business being done."
"Let me think about this," she said, and let out a long sigh.
"May I make a suggestion?" Connor said, walking toward the trio. He took them by surprise. They didn't know anyone else in the room was conscious. Alex was a little scared. She had no idea what her brother was about to say. She hoped his speech in the Fairy Kingdom hadn't given him a big head.
"Who are you?"
the advisor asked.
"I'm Connor, and this is my sister Alex," he said.
Alex awkwardly waved from behind him.
"You have a lovely castle," she said.
"How did you get in here?" King Chase asked.
"Seriously?" Connor asked him, gesturing to the sleeping guards behind him. "This isn't exactly Fort Knox."
"They don't know what that is, Connor,"
Alex whispered.
"Young man," the advisor said, "with all due respect, this is a very important matter we're discussing, and..."
And we've been trying to find a solution for years, and still haven't come up with anything that doesn't take away basic human freedoms, Sleeping Beauty said.
So, if this young man thinks he has an answer, I say we let him speak.
The men didn't argue with her. Connor had the floor.
Have any of you ever heard of coffee before?
Connor asked. They stared blankly at him.
Never mind. I've been told it stunts your growth anyway, he said. I fall asleep a lot in school. It's not my fault. My brain just turns off when it gets bored. A trick I discovered, when I remember to use it, is to wear a rubber band around my wrist and snap it right when I feel myself drifting off to sleep. The sting keeps me conscious for a good 5 minutes, guaranteed.
They were puzzled by his proposal.
Look, it isn't a rocket science solution, but it works, Connor said. And your people could do it to themselves, so you wouldn't be forcing them into anything. And maybe if they did it enough, they eventually wouldn't need to anymore.
They still needed convincing. Connor turned to Alex for help.
Alex, do you have any rubber bands on you?
Connor asked.
I may have some hair ties in my bag, Alex said.
She put her bag on the floor and searched through it, accidentally knocking the glass slipper out onto the floor. The clank echoed through the throne room. The twins panicked. It was as if time had frozen. Sleeping Beauty, her husband, and the advisor grew very tense.
How did you get that? Sleeping Beauty asked.
It's Queen Cinderella's glass slipper, the advisor said.
No, it's not what you think, Alex said, quickly putting it back into her bag.
We didn't steal it, Connor said.
Guards!
King Chase shouted. A few guards from behind the twins suddenly awoke and became alert.
Seize them!
The king shouted.
Here we go again!
Connor said as the guards sprinted toward them. He grabbed Alex's wrist and pulled her into a run.
Your Majesty! Alex pleaded to Sleeping Beauty. We've come to borrow your spindle. We're collecting objects for the wishing spell.
Sleeping Beauty stood, about to speak, but the twins couldn't wait around to hear what she had to say. They were running around the throne room in circles, barely missing the extended hands of guards trying to grab hold of them. Alex and Connor ran through a set of open doors leading out of the throne room. They had no idea where they were going, but they knew they had to move. They had been through too much to let the guards catch them this time.
I'm so tired of being chased, Connor yelled.
They ran down hallway after hallway, making sharp turns whenever they could to throw off the guards. They were moving so fast that the beautiful architecture and artwork of the castle was nothing but a blur. Suddenly, the hallway they were in came to a dead end.
Now what are we going to do?
Alex asked.
Quick, in here,
Connor said, and pulled her through the closest set of open doors. They found a stone staircase on the other side and ran up it. It spiraled higher and higher, and the twins wondered if it would ever end. They were climbing to an impossible height. They must have been headed to the tallest tower in the castle. They reached the very top of the stairs and found a big, black door. They rushed through it and immediately locked it from the other side.
Now where are we?
Connor asked and looked around. The twins were standing in a large, circular room with tall windows. There were violet drapes and a lavender rug. A balcony wrapped around the entire room outside. Only two pieces of furniture were in the room. An enormous bed and a spinning wheel made from dark wood.
Connor,
Alex said softly.
I think we're in Sleeping Beauty's room. The room she slept in for 100 years.
Connor walked over to the bed. There was a beautiful engraving on the headboard that said,
For 100 years she slept. The hearts of her people she kept. So they awaited with patience for the bliss of true love. And true love's first kiss.
Alex went to the spinning wheel, but the spindle was gone.
The spindle isn't here, Alex said. I don't understand. The man who wrote the journal promised Sleeping Beauty he would return it after he used it.
Is it not here? Or did he just not return it because the spell didn't work?
Connor asked. The lock on the black door began to rattle as someone from the other side unlocked it.
Hide!
Alex whispered. She and her brother dove underneath the bed. The black door swung open. The twins expected to see the clunky boots of the guards, but instead, they saw a pair of pink heels.
Is that?
Alex whispered.
Is that what?
Ouch!
Connor hit his head hard on the bottom of the bed.
You can come out from there, Sleeping Beauty said.
The twins couldn't tell if it was a trap.
I've called off the gods, Sleeping Beauty added. No one's going to hurt you.
The twins slowly crawled out from under the bed.
We didn't steal the slipper,
Alex said. It's hard to explain, but I promise we're not thieves.
Sleeping Beauty nodded. I believe you.
You do? Connor asked. He was stunned.
Because if I were you, I would totally think we were thieves.
Sleeping Beauty smiled at them and took a seat on the bed.
So, you two are after the wishing spell.
The twins nodded self-consciously.
It's a really long story, Connor said.
I'm sure, Sleeping Beauty said. And you've come to ask me permission to borrow the spindle from my spinning wheel, haven't you?
The twins guiltily nodded. Sleeping Beauty laughed to herself.
You know, not too long ago, a man came to my castle and asked me to borrow it, she said. At first, I was completely against the idea, but he convinced me.
How do you manage that? Alex asked.
He told me all about the wishing spell, and how he had traveled to another world, fallen in love, and was desperate to return. And being somewhat romantic myself, I let him humor me with the story, she said, and her smile faded back into the contemplative expression they had first seen. And then he started describing this world to me, a place of machines and technology, a place of enormous structures and lands and people unlike any I'd ever seen. And I believed him.
Why? Alex asked.
Because I had dreamed about this place, Sleeping Beauty said. It's complicated, and even I don't understand it. But while I was under that horrible spell, I dreamed about the place he was describing. I dreamed about so many things. I had just assumed it had come from my imagination. I never mentioned a word of it to anyone. So I knew he had to be telling the truth.
Did he ever return it? Alex asked, desperate to know. Did the spell work for him?
Sleeping Beauty studied the twins' faces. You're from there, aren't you? She asked. And you're trying to find a way home.
Alex and Connor didn't have to respond. She already knew it was true. She reached under one of the pillows on the bed and withdrew a metal spindle. The twins felt their spirits soar. There it was. The man had returned it. The spell must have worked for him.
All I'm going to ask in return is that you also return it when you're done, Sleeping Beauty said, and handed it to Alex. As I'm sure you can imagine, it has sentimental value for me.
The twins were beaming. Now they knew getting home was a possibility, and they weren't trapped in the land of stories forever.
We're just a couple of strangers, Alex said. Why are you being so kind to us?
There are many things that are out of my control, Sleeping Beauty said, and her smile faded again.
So I like to help as much as I can, when I can.
She stood and walked outside onto the balcony. The twins followed her. Although the kingdom wasn't in the best condition, the view was spectacular. Alex and Connor could see the entire kingdom and parts of others. The ocean sparkled in the distance, and a beautiful waterfall could be seen in the mountains nearby. It was so beautiful, they forgot how high up they were.
This used to be the most beautiful of all the kingdoms, Sleeping Beauty said. The rolling green hills, the wildflowers, the rivers that used to flow, they're all just memories now. Even the natural beauty of the land was put to rest under that awful curse.
Will things ever get better? Alex asked.
I certainly hope so, Sleeping Beauty said. Can I tell you a secret?
She asked the twins, receiving eager nods.
I haven't slept since Chase awoke me with the kiss.
The twins were shocked.
Yikes, Connor said. You must be exhausted.
After sleeping for a century, I'll be quite rested for a while, Sleeping Beauty said. I promised myself, and I promised this kingdom, that I wouldn't rest until it was restored to its original state. Had my parents just let me die, as the curse originally intended, none of this would have ever happened. So I'm prepared to spend the rest of my life, the life they ensured, making things right again.
Alex and Connor felt sorry for the young queen. They'd always been so distracted by the thought of a cursed, sleeping kingdom that they'd never thought about the responsibility a monarch would face putting it back on its feet.
I suppose that's why the wishing spell has always intrigued me, Sleeping Beauty said. It's proof that if someone wants something enough, and they're willing to work for it, they can achieve great things. I keep the spindle as a reminder that even the worst curses cast by the most powerful enchantresses can eventually be overcome.
The kingdom's very lucky to have a queen like you, Alex said. A weaker person would have given up. Try the rubber band trick, Connor told her. I promise you won't regret it.
I will, Sleeping Beauty smiled. It's probably time you hit it out.
I may believe you, but convincing my husband and the royal advisor of your innocence won't be easy. Follow me. I know a secret way out of the castle. The twins left the castle feeling inspired by Sleeping Beauty. The fairy tale had always romanticized the bravery of the young prince and the horror of the curse that had been cast upon the land. But it had failed to mention what a strong and brave woman the Sleeping Beauty truly was. Chapter 15. The Northern Kingdom. Alex and Connor traveled into the Northern Kingdom by boat, a first for the twins. They found a fisherman just about to travel up the river into the kingdom and persuaded him to let them come aboard. Alex said they were lost and pretended to cry. She was very convincing, too. Connor, however, was not. He tried to join in on the performance, and things just became awkward. Thankfully, the fisherman allowed them to travel with him anyway. The boat was small and flat and had just enough room for the three of them. It traveled perfectly along with the river's current, so they didn't even need to row. The twins were enjoying the ride and were able to appreciate the scenery, pointing out every riverside village they saw. It was nice to travel without fear of a wolf or an ogre running up from behind them. The Northern Kingdom was very misty and cool. The twins could tell it was the type of place that would become freezing in the winter. The kingdom was covered with grassy fields and several bodies of water. An icy, steep mountain range bordered the north. The boat traveled along the river and poured into Swan Lake, which was appropriately inhabited by many swans and other birds. Snow White's palace sat on the edge of Swan Lake. It was short but wide, with tan marble walls, dark green domes, and several colorful stained glass windows, including an especially large one shaped as a bright red apple. "What's up with all the apple tributes?" Connor asked. "Didn't the apple almost kill Snow White? Why does she have it displayed every chance she gets?" "I suppose it's symbolic for the kingdom, like a cross in a church," Alex said, giving her best educated guess. There were no towns or villages near the palace. It had been built away from everything else and was an isolated world of its own. It seemed like such a lonely place. Alex had spent some time with her nose in the journal, rereading everything she could in case she'd missed something. She put it away and began searching the shore until she finally spotted what she was looking for. "Excuse me, sir," Alex said to the fisherman. "Can you please drop us off at that riverbank?" The fisherman steered the boat in that direction, and the twins got off and said goodbye to him. "Why are we getting off here?" Connor asked. "The palace is that way." "Connor, I'm tired of explaining everything to you. Here," she said, and handed him the journal. He read the pages that she had been looking over during their trip on the boat. "Snow White's palace overlooks Swan Lake, and part of the lake flows into the moat circling the palace, which works to the advantage of anyone trying to sneak into the palace unnoticed. There is a hidden gate at the bottom of the palace that the moat runs through. It's right by the dungeon and is used to transport prisoners into and out of the palace by boat. It's easy to swim under the gate and then climb up onto the dock inside. The glass coffin is in a large storage room that used to be the Evil Queen's private chamber on the third floor. On the second floor, you'll find a large portrait of the Evil Queen herself, just past the grand staircase, off the main entrance. The portrait is actually a secret door that leads up to the chamber. Travel at night, so it's difficult for anyone to spot you in the water. But note that the Swan Lake waters are very deep and can be rough after sundown. Use something as a flotation device, like a log or a piece of wood." Alex was standing next to a log that had washed ashore on the riverbed, and she gestured down to it. "See?" Alex said. "Gotcha," Connor said. The twins waited for nightfall to travel across the river to the palace. They carefully placed the log into the river and then entered the water themselves. It was unbearably cold. Connor made a high-pitched gasping sound as soon as he was waist-deep. "Woo! It's so cold! I think we may be twin sisters now," he said through rattling teeth. "I don't think I've ever been this cold in my entire life." "Just keep thinking that we only have two more items left to collect and then we'll be home," Alex said, shivering herself. "Jewels from Snow White's coffin and the saber from the deepest sea," Connor repeated to himself. "Jewels from Snow White's coffin and the saber from the deepest sea. Nope, I'm still cold." They held onto the log and drifted on the current to the palace. Having the log was a good call, since the water was very choppy and the twins were getting tired just by holding onto it. They probably would have drowned without it. The closer they got to the palace, the more soldiers they saw marching the grounds. "There are so many soldiers," Connor said through shivering teeth. "It's because of the Evil Queen," Alex said.
I doubt there was this much surveillance when the man from the journal came.
The twins submerged themselves completely whenever they thought a soldier might be able to see them. They steered the log into the palace's moat, careful not to make a splash or cause too many ripples. They had to circle the palace twice, but eventually they found the secret gate. They let go of the log and swam under the gate. It was a much deeper dive than they had thought. Connor came to the surface on the other side and was gasping for air. He treaded water for a moment, waiting for his sister to surface, but she didn't.
Alex? Connor asked, looking for her in the water around him. Alex!
Connor dove back underwater. He found Alex, struggling under the gate. One of the straps on her back had caught when she'd swum under it. She was stuck, and she desperately needed air. Connor swam down to her and yanked on her back as hard as he could to set his sister free, but it wouldn't budge. He tugged harder, and the strap finally ripped off. He helped Alex get to the surface. She was breathing harder than he had ever heard her breathe before. She had been seconds away from drowning. Connor helped her over to the dock, and they both climbed on top of it. They were both so alarmed that they had forgotten how cold they were.
Thank you, Alex said once she had caught her breath. That was really brave of you.
I didn't have a choice, Connor said. You had all the wishing spell items in your bag. Alex playfully hit him, and they quietly laughed. They were drenched, and their jaws were chattering so hard that the sound of it echoed around them. The only way out was through a stone doorway. The twins peered inside it and saw a long hallway. At one end was a spiral staircase leading down to the dungeon, they assumed, and at the other was a spiral staircase leading up. They chose the staircase leading up. It led straight to another hall with a steamy odor in the air. It was very humid inside this part of the palace, and the twins soon walked by an open door and saw why.
Look, it's the laundry room, Alex said.
The room was full of large, steaming tubs of water, and several garments and sheets were hung up to dry around the room. It was past working hours, so the room was empty.
I have an idea, Alex said, and darted inside the room.
What are you doing? Connor asked her. She started digging through a pile of what Connor hoped were clean clothes and linens.
If the grounds outside are any indication, I bet the halls of the palace are swarming with soldiers, she said.
And? Connor said.
We're going to seem very suspicious walking around soaked to the bone in our t-shirts and jeans, she explained.
She pulled out two dresses and two lacy caps from the basket. No way, Connor said, realizing what she intended to do with them. Absolutely not.
Connor, put your pride aside and get dressed. We've come way too far to get caught now, she said, pulling one of the dresses over her head.
The guys at school can never know about this, Connor said, with a very serious face.
If your friends find out you traveled into the fairy tale world, I doubt this would be what they were most interested in hearing about, Alex said.
The twins got dressed and looked almost identical in the same outfit. They wrapped their wet clothes in bags and towels and then carried the towels to look busy. They journeyed higher into the palace, perfectly disguised as two maids working a night shift. The palace had beautiful marble floors and walls on the inside as well. The stained glass windows were even more beautiful with moonlight shining through them. Alex was right. Every hall and corridor was under constant watch by soldiers. Connor was too embarrassed to look any of them in the eye. He did find a few gold coins in the pocket of his maid's uniform, however, which made him feel better. Alex and Connor found the grand staircase in the middle of the palace. They climbed it to the second floor and began scanning the halls for a portrait of the evil queen. Like Cinderella's palace, there were portraits of past rulers framed on the walls and statues of all seven of the dwarfs that had helped Snow White.
How do we know what the evil queen looks like? Connor asked. We've never seen her before.
We'll just have to guess, Alex said. They walked past a portrait of a woman sitting in a garden. All the plants and flowers were bright around her, but she wore a long, dark gown. The woman was beautiful, but she had a blank, cold expression on her face.
That's her, Alex said.
There was something about the woman's eyes in the portrait that made Alex sure of it. They were beautiful, but they seemed so empty, as if all the happiness had been drained out of her soul. Alex waited for two soldiers to leave the hall and then tried pulling on the portrait. It was stuck. She pulled harder, and still it didn't budge.
Are you sure that's it? Connor said.
100%, Alex said. She gave it another good tug, and the portrait swung away from the wall like an open door. Behind the portrait was a wooden ladder that went up to the third floor.
Nice one, Connor said, and gave his sister a high five.
The twins climbed up the ladder and found the back of another secret door. The twins entered the storage chamber from behind an exact replica of the portrait they had just gone through on the second floor. The whole room was filled with old furniture covered in white sheets and old trunks and chests. The portrait the twins had climbed through was the only painting hung on the walls. The rest were stacked in piles against the walls around the room. The room was long and had a set of heavy double doors at one end and a raised platform with a curtain around it at the other. The twins knew without a doubt that this place was where the Evil Queen had kept her magic mirrors. There was a large counter with tubes, vials, and glass containers. They had all been emptied out, but the twins knew it must have been where the Evil Queen had kept her poisons.
"This room gives me the creeps," Connor said. "It looks like no one has been here for years."
"I don't see the glass coffin anywhere," Alex said. She started uncovering the furniture, trying to find it, but it wasn't in the room. "The coffin isn't here," she said, feeling a rush of panic come over her. "Let's just look around."
"Look around for what?" Connor asked.
"For anything," yelled Alex, frustrated and upset. "Try and find anything that says where the glass coffin may have been taken." The twins searched the room from top to bottom. They looked through all the trunks and cases, but found nothing that gave any sign of where it might be. There were so many years of memories packed away in this room, it was impossible to tell what had belonged to the Evil Queen, or to Snow White, or to the rulers before them. Alex was going through a stack of parchments. She found interesting handwritten letters among them that she couldn't help but read. The first letter had masculine handwriting, and said,
"Dear Evely, I love you more than a bird loves the morning sun. Every second I'm away from you is a moment wasted. I am yours forever. Mira."
The next was written by a woman, and said,
"Dearest Mira, you are the last thing I think about before I sleep, and the first thing I think about when I wake. And the time in between is filled with a longing to be in your arms. My heart is yours, and yours alone. Evely."
The letters between the two lovers continued. The handwriting on the next letter seemed rushed.
"Evely, it is the cruelest punishment possible to be kept from you. Not being able to touch your skin or kiss your lips has made my soul hurt. I am hollow without you. I will save you from this wickedness. I swear it. Mira."
Alex could see tiny circles on the paper. Teardrops, she figured. The letters were wrinkled from having been held so tight.
"Mira, the thought of being with you again is what keeps my heart beating. Every day is a day spent searching for a way to be with you. I live for you. I love you with every breath I take. Evely."
They were short, but so passionate. Alex felt her own heart beating faster after reading them. She looked for more, but found none.
"Alex," Connor said, "come take a look at this."
He was going through the painting stacked against the wall and had found one that made his heart drop. Connor pulled a large portrait out from the stack. It was of a tall, grizzled man with a bushy, brown beard. He wore a large coat and held a crossbow.
"That must be the Evil Queen's huntsman," Alex said.
"I bet," Connor said. "But look closer."
Alex took a second look and saw that partially hidden behind the huntsman in the portrait was a little girl. She had bright green eyes and hair that was so dark red it seemed purple.
"It can't be," Alex said.
The twins felt sick to their stomachs. It was the woman they had seen in Red Riding Hood's castle. Her features and hair color were too distinctive for it not to be.
"So, is she the huntsman's daughter?" Connor asked.
"She must be," Alex said.
"I didn't even know he had a daughter," Connor said. "What does she want with the wishing spell?"
Alex thought about it. She barely knew anything about the huntsman. She knew nothing about his daughter. While the wheels spun in her head, coming up with different possibilities, a horrifying thought came to her.
"What if she's not collecting for herself? What if she's collecting for the Evil Queen?" Alex said.
Connor's face went white, and he shook his head.
"No," he said. "What would she want with the wishing spell?"
"It makes sense," Alex said. She couldn't deny the facts.
"She escaped from prison for a reason. She has something unfinished. Maybe revenge or something bigger. Something she can't complete herself."
"What if she needs it for the same reason we do?" Connor asked. "What if she's trying to get into our world?"
The idea hadn't occurred to Alex. She looked back at the portrait of the Evil Queen on the wall. She stared at the painted face and tried to find the answers in her lifeless eyes.
What could she be planning?
The twins heard a set of footsteps outside the chamber. The door was unlocked from the outside, and someone started to open it.
"Quick,
Hide,
Connor said. He and Alex jumped inside one of the bigger trunks and shut the lid, leaving it open just a crack so they could still see the room.
Your Majesty,
said a booming man's voice from farther down the hall, and whoever was opening the door stopped.
Yes, what is it? Said a woman's voice just behind the door.
My men and I have returned,
the man said.
We've searched everywhere, and there's still no sign of your stepmother.
The twins recognized his voice. It was Sir Grant, the soldier who had made the announcement about the Evil Queen and the Charming Kingdom during the ball.
Oh? Said the woman.
Your Highness, forgive me for asking again, but you were the last person to see her in the palace before she escaped. Are you sure there isn't anything you can tell us about that night? Any detail or clue, or something she said that would give us an idea of where she was going?
Sir Grant asked.
I've told you countless times. I don't remember anything of the sort, the woman said. I went to simply say a few things that had been on my mind, and once I had done so, I left.
Your Highness, it's only a matter of time before she strikes. Before she poisons a river and kills half a kingdom, or something worse,
Grant said.
You knew her better than anyone else. For your own safety, please inform us immediately if you remember anything else.
You will be the first I inform if any memories surface, the woman said. Now, if you'll excuse me, I'd like to be alone.
Sir Grant returned down the hall. The woman slowly turned the handle of the chamber door and opened it. She was a beautiful woman with the darkest hair and the lightest skin the twins had ever seen.
It's Snow White,
Alex whispered to Connor and squeezed his arm. She wore a white nightgown and a matching overcoat. She stood in the doorway for a moment, just looking at the room before she entered it. It seemed hard for her to be in the room where so many attempts on her life had once been planned. The way she surveyed everything around her made the twins assume she hadn't been inside this room in a very long time. Snow White entered the room and locked the door behind her. She walked around the room and carefully went through all the things just as the twins had done. She went to a stack of old books. She went through the pages of one that was black and had a large skull on its cover. Snow White flipped through its pages until she let out a tiny gasp and dropped the book. The twins could see from the open book lying on the ground that she had discovered the page with the recipe for a poisoned apple. She took a seat on the platform behind her and began crying, burying her face into her hands. The whole situation seemed to have taken a toll on the young queen.
We should ask her where the coffin is,
Alex whispered to Connor.
Are you sure? She seems like she needs a moment, Connor said.
Unfortunately, we don't have a moment to spare, Alex said.
Alex slowly stood in the trunk and pushed open the lid.
Your Majesty, she said softly.
Snow White gasped. She was startled and embarrassed to see she wasn't alone.
Who are you? She asked. How did you get in here?
Boy, if we got a nickel every time someone asked us that, we could afford our own palace to sneak into, said Connor, standing up beside his sister.
We don't mean any harm, Miss White. We just need to ask you a question, and then we'll be gone,
Alex said.
First, tell me how you got in here, Snow White said.
The portrait, Connor said. There's a secret ladder that leads down to the second floor.
Connor, don't give away all our secrets,
Alex said.
I know that, Snow White said. I used it when I would sneak into this room as a girl. How did you know about it?
We read about it somewhere, Connor said, waving his hands like the subject wasn't a big deal.
You seem like nice children, but you shouldn't be sneaking into places where you don't belong, Snow White said. These are very dangerous times we're living in.
Tell me about it, Connor said with a snort.
We completely agree and promise never to do it again, Alex said. We were just wondering where your glass coffin might be.
Snow White looked at them uneasily. It was such a bizarre question.
It was moved, she said. To where?
Connor asked.
I gave it back to the dwarfs, Snow White said. It was beautiful, but as you can imagine, it was strange to have that coffin in the palace. They keep it somewhere in their minds.
The twins sighed at the news. The road ahead of them had just become much longer.
What on earth would you two want with my coffin?
Snow White asked. They looked at each other, not sure what to tell her and what not to tell her.
We're on a bit of a scavenger hunt, Alex said, and we're in a bit of a time crunch, you see, because your stepmother may be after the same things we are.
Snow White looked at them very seriously.
Children, my stepmother is a very dangerous woman. If she's after something and you are in her way, she won't hesitate to kill you. She is heartless. If there is any possibility of you crossing paths with her, you must stop whatever you're doing immediately.
A loud banging came from the door.
Your Majesty, are you in here?
A soldier asked.
The king can find you and is concerned.
Yes, one moment, please, Snow White said, and then turned to the twins. You two should go.
The twins nodded and climbed up to the portrait.
Promise you'll think about what I've said, Snow White said to them, just before they shut the portrait door.
Of course, Alex lied. Snow White smiled with relief and left the chamber. The twins decided to exit the palace through the main entrance, since they were still disguised as servants.
The dwarf mines are in the dwarf forests, which aren't very far from here, Alex said, looking down at the map. Remember, Snow White ran there by foot after the huntsman failed to kill her.
We're going back into the dwarf forests, Connor said. Do we have a death wish?
We don't have a choice, Alex said.
The twins camped out in a safe patch of woods near Snow White's palace and slept for the little night remaining. They hung their wet clothes over a tree branch to dry by the next morning. They began the return to the dwarf forest. Alex's bag had only one strap now, but it worked nonetheless. They walked for a good while before they found a driver willing to give them a ride.
Are you sure you want to go in there? It's a very dangerous place, the driver said.
Trust us. We know, Connor said. He gave the driver the coins he had found in his maid's dress the night before to further persuade him. The cart traveled down the path, past the ugly duckling pond, which Alex found incredibly amusing, and into a forest that had been logged. For miles around, there were nothing but tree stumps. It didn't make the twins sad to see all the missing trees. They had seen enough live ones recently to make up the difference.
I really hope we don't run into the evil queen, Connor said during the trip. That would just suck.
I just hope she doesn't already have the saber from the deepest sea, Alex said. Otherwise, we may have to cross paths.
I wonder if she knows about us, Connor said. If she sent the huntsman's daughter to find Sleeping Beauty's spindle and the troll and goblin king's crown, and they both were gone, she would realize sooner or later that someone else is collecting objects with a spell.
I hope she doesn't, Alex said, and then let out a sigh. It seems like the longer we're here, the worse it gets for us. Something always comes up that makes things more difficult.
Alex's face went pale, and her mouth dropped open. She looked as if she had just seen a ghost.
What's wrong? Connor asked. You look like you got a B on a pop quiz.
He turned and looked in the direction of her gaze. In the distance, standing in the middle of the field of stumps, was a tree that, instead of growing straight out of the ground, was curved and wound in circles like a large vine. It was unmistakably the curvy tree, the one their father had told them stories about seeing when he was a kid.
You're right, Alex, Connor said. Things always find a way of becoming more complex.